I have an opportunity to share with you some readings, which are excerpts from poetry by Walt Whitman, who was born in New York 200 years ago this week. He died in 1872, at age 72. He died in 1892 at age 72. I have dyslexia today. During the Civil War, he volunteered in the Soldiers' Hospital where his brother was a patient. So the first reading is entitled, "This is from Song of Myself, Section 48. I hear and behold God in every object, yet understand God not in the least. Nor do I understand who there can be more wonderful than myself. Why should I wish to see God better than this day? I see something of God each hour of the 24, and each moment then. In the faces of women and men, I see God, and in my own face in the glass, I find letters from God dropped in the street, and every one of them is signed by God's name. And I leave them where they are, for that I know wheresoe'er I go, others will punctually come and go forever and ever." And this is from I Sing the Body Electric, Section 8. Have you ever loved the body of a woman? Have you ever loved the body of a man? Do you not see that these are exactly the same to all, in all nations and times all over the earth? If anything is sacred, the human body is sacred. The last excerpt is the longest and is from I Sing the Body Electric, Section 9. Oh, my body, I dare not desert the likes of you and other men and women, nor the likes of the parts of you. I believe the likes of you are to stand or fall with the likes of the soul, and that they are the soul. I believe the likes of you shall stand or fall with my poems, and that they are poems. Head, neck, hair, ears, drop and tympan of the ears, eyes, eye fringes, iris of the eye, eyebrows, and the waking or sleeping of the lids, mouth, tongue, lips, teeth, roof of mouth, jaws and jaw hinges, nose, nostrils of the nose, and the partition, cheeks, temples, forehead, chin, throat, back of the neck, neck slough, strong shoulders, manly beard, scapula, hind shoulders, and the ample side round of the chest. Upper arm, armpit, elbow socket, lower arm, arm sinews, arm bones, wrist and wrist joints, hand, palm, knuckles, thumb, forefinger, finger balls, finger joints, fingernails. Broad breast front, curling hair of the breast. Breast bone, breast side, ribs, belly, backbone, joints of the backbone. Strong set of thighs, well carrying the trunk above. Leg fibers, knee, knee pan, upper leg, under leg. All attitudes, all the shapeliness, all the belongings of my or your body or of anyone's body, male or female, the lung sponges, the stomach sac, the bowels sweet and clean, the brain in its fold inside the skull frame, sympathies, heart valves, palate valves, sexuality, maternity, womanhood, and all that is woman, and the man that comes from woman, the womb, the teats, nipples, breast milk, tears, laughter, weeping, love looks, love perturbations and risings. The voice, articulation, language, whispering, shouting aloud. Food, drink, pulse, digestion, sweat, sleep, walking, swimming. Poise on the hips, leaping, reclining, embracing, arm curving and tightening. The continual changes of the flex of the mouth and around the eyes, the skin, the sunburnt shade, freckles, hair. The curious sympathy one feels when feeling with the hand the naked meat of the body. The circling rivers, the breath, and breathing it in and out. The beauty of the waist and thence of the hips, and thence downward toward the knees. The red thin jellies within you or within me, the bones and the marrow in the bones, the exquisite realization of health. Oh, I say these are not the parts and poems of the body only, but of the soul. Oh, I say now, these are the soul.
It has been 40 years since I graduated from high school. Even so, I want to sue my high school for educational malpractice. They gave us only one semester of American literature. That was barely enough to say they'd exposed us to it, but not enough to give us any depth, not enough for us to learn about and wrestle with the challenging and contradictory messages of some of the great writers of this country, like Walt Whitman. Our textbook for that semester of my junior year was an anthology with little parts of every selected writer and a brief introduction. I know Whitman was there in that book, but I can't remember being moved, inspired, annoyed, or offended by him. Perhaps that is what the editors of the textbook or the State Board of Education feared about him. They saw him as provocative, even dangerous. He was. He was dangerous to conformity and social conventions. His life and his words urge us to freedom, and that includes thinking for yourself and building human kinship across barriers of class, race, gender, and other differences. His poetry celebrates human bodies, desire, and physical affection. Whitman was challenging to the customs of this country in his day. He remains challenging to our ways of regarding one another and our ways of treating vulnerable people, and that includes all of us. Born 200 years ago, Walt Whitman was one of his parents' 8 surviving children. He grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and on Long Island. He calls Long Island by its native name, Pamunkey. After moving to Manhattan, he worked for newspapers, wrote stories and poems, and got involved in politics. During the Civil War, on hearing that his brother George was wounded at the battlefront in Virginia, Walt went to the front and became a caregiver, a volunteer nurse. Then he served a couple of years in a military hospital in Washington, D.C. After the war, he worked for the Federal Department of the Interior. Throughout his life, Whitman published several collections of poems, especially Song of Myself and Leaves of Grass. He added new poems to later editions of these works, and he published prose works too. The collection of his prose and poetry is more than 1,000 pages long. In 1873, Whitman had the first of a series of strokes, which left him increasingly paralyzed over his last 15 years of life. He moved in with his brother James in Camden, New Jersey. James then moved out into the country, and Walt bought a house and stayed in Camden. He died at age 72. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself, the poet says in Song of Myself. I am large, I contain multitudes. He takes self-contradiction, that which is normally seen as a flaw, and he shows the richness that it holds. He does this first for himself, but the poet speaks as well for all people. We should appreciate the multitudes and complexities contained in each of our lives, in your life. Whitman has been called the poet of democracy. He asserts the freedom of all citizens to think for themselves and not to take at face value what others tell them to think. In a poem from Song of Myself, he says, "You shall no longer take things at second hand or third hand." Maybe that's what my high school didn't want us to get about Whitman. In other words, he says, trust your own goodness and your own good sense. Don't even give the poet any authority over you, he says, writing this. You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen to all sides and filter them for yourself. Religiously, Whitman was a skeptic. As a writer, a queer man, and a free spirit, he might feel welcome in many UU settings today. But he was not a member of a Universalist or a Unitarian congregation in the 1800s. Whitman's outlook on life was too large to be held by any church of his day. An early trauma, no doubt, cemented his avoidance of religious institutions and his criticism of religious hypocrisy. It's clear from his writing and other historical evidence that he was gay. When Whitman was 21, a Presbyterian minister, speaking from the pulpit, accused him of committing immoral sexual acts. The preacher called for punishment. Afterwards, a mob hunted Whitman down where he hid in a neighbor's house and took him out and poured tar on his body and covered him with feathers. They made him sit on a wooden rail and held him aloft as they paraded him out of town. It took him a month to recover physically. After the pain of his injuries and such public shame, it's amazing that he could write with deep love about human beings and optimism about his country. Perhaps that assault had something to do with Whitman's insistence that throughout his life, he was not talking about same-sex love or longing in any of his poems. One man wrote Whitman to inquire about the homoerotic themes of one set of the poems, poems that are now recognized widely for their male sexual imagery. The man was more affirming than accusatory, but Whitman wrote back a flat denial. Yet in his poetry, he seems to make an admission that we can look at the words beneath his denials. Whitman writes this: "Hear the frailest leaves of me, and yet my strongest lasting. Here I shade my thoughts. I myself do not expose them, and yet they expose me more than all my other poems." A notable few of Whitman's poems do contain homoerotic images. They evoke longing and loving of one man for others. They describe the male form, working, walking, swimming, rowing, clothed and naked. Yet when his books were published, the scandal was not the male imagery in a few of the poems. The scandal was the sexual explicitness of his verse in general. It was the nudity and sexuality of women that he celebrates also. It was words about sex and love between men and women which upset many critics. The critics' controversy over the erotic images of women's poems was about whether he meant what he wrote. His attackers asserted that he was talking about sex, and because of this, he was corrupt and filthy. His defenders denied that he was talking about sexual passion at all. His verse wasn't obscene, one supporter said. It merely shows simplicity and freshness. Both sides of this argument reflected Americans' general discomfort about sex, one side objecting to its discussion or acceptance, the other denying that it was a factor at all. In pushing the envelope and stretching social comfort zones, Whitman was exposing the fear of our own desires and our own freedom, the fear of our own physical bodies and those of others. It was radical for any published poet of any gender to discuss and celebrate the female form, to celebrate women as sexual beings. He writes of the sprawl and fullness of babes, the bosoms and heads of women, the folds of their dress, their style as we pass in the street, the contour of their shape downwards. Whitman says it is foolish to corrupt your body. To the so-called moral and religious leaders of Whitman's day, giving pleasure to our bodies or with our bodies was corrupting. What he means, however, is the opposite. That is, failing to respect your body and to love it is corrupting. After all, the body was made for sensation, pleasure, and erotic love. Whitman says he wants to discorrupt us all. Hence, the parts of our bodies that are the most ordinary and often unrecognized parts are for him subjects of celebration and praise. He writes, "Welcome is every organ and attribute of me, and of any man, hearty and clean. Not an inch nor a particle of an inch is vile, and none shall be less familiar than the rest." And he describes his body inch by inch. Countless poets have spoken of the mind. Whitman praises the folds of the tissues of the brain. Other poets invoke the heart. Whitman has named the valves in it. If a poet is in love, they will mention the lips of a beloved. Whitman covers the whole thing. He says mouth, tongue, lips, teeth, roof of the mouth, jaws, and the jaw hinges. All these parts of us are miracles to him. They are miracles. This Tuesday, I'm going to the dentist's office for a 6-month checkup. Maybe I'll ask them about Whitman. Maybe I'll ask, "Is that why you're looking in my mouth? Is that why you care for it? Because it's amazing? I hope they say yes. Whitman's words go further down the body. He points out the belly, the back, the fingernails, knees, and armpits. How many poets mention armpits? He goes further. The stomach sac, the bowels, sweet and clean. He will not let any part of our bodies be less than beautiful. There is no reason for avoidance and none for disgust. In the words of modern philosopher Martha Nussbaum, the emotion of disgust is what fuels the fear of sexuality and the fear of physical pleasure. Disgust is what fuels repression of people and the control and policing of people through customs, habits, and laws. Recently, the state legislatures of Alabama and Mississippi passed laws that severely criminalize abortion in almost any pregnancy, including a pregnancy caused by rape or by the assault known as incest. Their governors approved the laws. Their aim is to get the Supreme Court of this nation to receive these laws as court cases and then use those cases to reverse the right of any woman in the nation to decide whether to have an abortion. These officials, including a few women, are claiming to protect unborn children. Meanwhile, in this country, 6 migrant children who fled here from Central America have died while being held in the custody of the U.S. government. Meanwhile, in the United States, 12 million children experience food insecurity. That is, 1 out of every 6 families doesn't know how it will pay for the next meal. That means 12 children are living with chronic hunger. If government officials don't wish to protect all the children among us now, they can't be serious about protecting the fetus carried by a woman. The goal of their severe legislation is control over bodies, the bodies of women and youth, especially the bodies of people in poverty. Respecting the body of every person is not merely spiritual or poetic. It is deeply political. In one poem, Whitman writes, "Have you ever loved the body of a woman? Have you ever loved the body of a man? Do you not see that these are exactly the same to all in all nations and times all over the earth?" These lines of his conclude a pair of poems depicting a slave auction. The poet shows the auctioneer's degrading sales pitch for the human property, first a man and then a woman. Yet the auction is not the center of the poem. The center is each human being's body, a body that's being sold, stolen, broken. Whitman appeals to our common humanity. Have you ever loved the body of a woman? Have you ever loved the body of a man? Do you not see that these are exactly the same to all in all nations and times all over the earth? If anything is sacred, the human body is sacred. Whitman's daring vision and vivid words are part of our legacy, not only as residents of the United States, but as human beings. His courage and encouragement belong to us all, to all people everywhere, of all ages and stages of life. This vision and this courage are not Whitman's work alone. Among this nation's artists and writers, Whitman has comrades of all genders, colors, and conditions. Comrades who have also made the case for the equality of everybody and the dignity of the human body. He is not alone in making the case for liberation and love of our physical beings. But when he wrote, Whitman surely must have felt alone. Perhaps this is why he denied that any of his poems with homoerotic images had anything to do with homoerotic love. As a sensual man, whose love and longing for other men would be condemned for nearly a century after his passing, his writings have urged all of us to see the sacredness of our bodies, to honor our desires, and to show to our fellow human beings the blessings of tenderness, compassion, and kindness. According to Nussbaum, the philosopher, Whitman's democracy is a democracy of love. He writes, "The sleepers are very beautiful as they lie unclothed. They flow hand in hand over the whole earth, from east to west, as they lie unclothed. The Asiatic and African are hand in hand. The European and American are hand in hand. Learned and unlearned are hand in hand. And male and female are hand in hand." In recognition of this bicentennial of his birth, I have three suggestions of ways you might honor Whitman's life, ways also to experience him honoring you and your life. First, in the coming week, read something of Whitman. It could be one poem or several of them. Most of them are online and in the public domain. The public domain is a phrase I bet he would have liked. You can also find his works at the public library, one of the few places remaining where people gather and mix together from countless backgrounds, a place of human kinship and solidarity. But if Whitman's work is really not your cup of tea, find somebody else's poem to read and reflect on that one for a few days. Second, in the coming week, celebrate your body and give thanks to it. Focus on one part or a few specific parts. Appreciate how that part works and what it does. Doesn't matter which one. Perhaps, for example, when you blow your nose, you can give thanks for it and appreciate your throat and sinuses too. This doesn't mean that you like your allergies or the cold that you might have, but you can marvel at those amazing parts of your body, your nose, throat, and sinuses, your nostrils and the partition. Every part of us is a miracle. Nose, fingernail, knee. Whitman says the body is the soul. The body is a poem. Third, in the coming week, take some action on behalf of the bodies and souls of other people. Whether it's demanding humane treatment by governments, insisting on the rights of women, or calling attention to the needs of children and families. Perhaps it would be giving monetary donations to ease the suffering of others from abuse, repression, war, hunger. Perhaps it would be showing up at the city council meeting on Tuesday. Whatever it is, do something to extend the gift of dignity to others by protecting the freedom and safety of their bodies and souls. Wounded by the violence of repressive social codes, Whitman still celebrates human bodies and desire and pleasure as gifts and blessings. He does this for himself and for us. In the midst of cruelty, Whitman promotes human dignity and freedom. He does this in his time and for our time and for all times. In a world with so much to make us fearful or break our hearts, he calls us to courage. He invites us to take his hand in ours and to join hands together and to go forward in love and faith together. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.